This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
But what isn't different, and actually what's so unusual, is the deluge of holiday buyers that you've talked about kind of already started. And as we're updating the playbook for what we would traditionally call the holiday season, we are thinking about that, and we are looking at how to really make this guide even more useful at a very unique time in history.
If you're a seller and you are responsible for driving a potential customer back to your eBay store or item, and that person ends up buying from you, you'll effectively pay 0% final value fee on that transaction.
What we've noticed is that on eBay, you tend to get rewarded in the algorithms for selling more. So when you sell more of one item, you tend to sell more of another item.
I'm Rebecca Michaels.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you're going to need to start and run and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 105. Welcome back, Rebecca.
Hi, Griff. How are you doing this week?
I think I may be doing better than you.
That's true. We were just talking about how there are fires all over Northern California this week. And yeah. It's very smoky here in San Francisco, where I live.
Yeah, and it was smoky down here in the South Bay in San Jose for a couple days. But yesterday it cleared out because the winds are all blowing to the east now. So the Foothill fires are blowing smoke in the opposite direction, but we're well aware of what's happening, and it is a terrible situation.
It really is, and we really feel for everyone who's impacted by this and feel so grateful for the first responders and especially the firefighters who are out there saving lives, saving structures, and helping to manage this situation.
Yeah, and if you're an eBay seller who's been severely impacted by these wildfires in the Bay Area, you should, when you can, contact customer support and let them know, because we'll cover for you.
Absolutely, Griff. We are also keeping an eye on the hurricanes that are bearing down on the southeastern U.S. right now. And I want to remind everyone out there that if you're impacted by the hurricanes, that we've got your back and we will take care of you and provide seller protections. But most importantly, stay safe out there.
Yeah. Rebecca, thank you very much for that reminder. We're always looking out for our sellers. And stay safe, stay secure.
Well, enough about that. Again, our heart goes out to anyone who's impacted. But let's go ahead and tell our listeners what's on this episode, episode 105.
Yeah, because it's a full episode. In fact, I think we're going to go over an hour. This week, our good friend Jen Deal returns with news on this year's seasonal playbook for sellers.
And podcast favorite Liz Austin is here to talk with Sumeet Patel about marketing for the holidays. Holiday already. This is so exciting.
Well, this is what's amazing because it's still August, but our data shows that there are shoppers now shopping for the holidays. I think they're very concerned about shipping delays and possible scarcity for hot items as the season moves on.
I think shopping early is a good idea this year, Griff. I certainly will be doing that.
And I will too.
And finally, we'll meet this week's seller, Tara Setenkaya, whose story was selected for the 25 Years of eBay series.
That's the lineup, so shall we begin?
Let's get to it.
As part of this month's overarching theme, preparing for the holiday shopping season, we thought this would be an excellent opportunity to revisit with our good friend of the podcast, customer marketing strategist on eBay's go-to-market team, Jen Deal. We're going to talk to Jen to find out what eBay's putting together this year to help sellers get ready for what we think will be a deluge of eBay holiday shoppers. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Griff. It's so great to be back.
We always enjoy talking to you. We always learn something new. Now, in the past, I know you've been in charge of the project that we call the Seasonal Playbook. Is that the same this year?
That's right. We are definitely still working with the Seasonal Playbook. I know 2020 has been a little bit different in terms of the seasons that have passed since March. But what isn't different, and actually what's so unusual, is the deluge of holiday buyers that you've talked about kind of already started. And as we're updating the playbook for what we would traditionally call the holiday season, we are thinking about that and we are looking at how to really make this guide even more useful at a very unique time in history.
So a lot of sellers may have accessed the playbook in previous holiday shopping season years. What will be different in the playbook this year? What can we expect to see in it?
Well, just as a quick reminder, in case you haven't been there, the Seasonal Playbook is an online guide, and we put the most up-to-date tips, the best practices, the tools to really help you with your selling success when we have peak periods. It's things that you probably have known and heard about, things that we communicate with you guys all the time about, but you might have forgotten, or you don't necessarily think about how to put those things pieces together to really capture the most from the traffic that's coming in and the buying behaviors that are escalated during the seasonal period. A few things are going to be different this year. Instead of a calendar in there of the traditional times when we do things like back to school, football, Thanksgiving, you know, it'll be sort of a generalized approach to capturing cyclicality and seasons all the time in this second half of the year. And that's because we have been managing traffic for holiday level already in many areas of the marketplace, meaning many categories of the marketplace. And then we'll continue to see that evolve as the country and the world really figures out their new normals and mitigate things like whether they're still quarantined, whether they're partially opened, or whether they're not opened. And I bring that up because it's really important, because what the unknowns are for any retailer out there are things like, is my brick and mortar, is my store down the street going to be open? Are customers coming in? And the likelihood is yes on this next one. Are customers going to be shopping more online this season because they've already had to many months of the year for different things? But also what's different is, if I can't be near my family and friends over the holidays, but I want to do different things like a virtual gift opening or a virtual dinner, I need to get things to them earlier and I need to ship it and I need to prepare it, and I need to think about everybody. I might have to do everything from all of the stocking stuffers I'm going to send to my mom across the country and her gift and put that in a box and send it across the country. So the calendar doesn't make so much sense if we've got really early bird. I mean, the early bird shoppers before, if you remember the statistics, is like 60, don't quote me exactly, but 60 some percent of them start shopping in September, October. And now we're saying they're good and that organized. They might even be starting earlier than that.
So. Yeah. And a higher percentage probably shopping in September, given the fact that I don't think anyone who shops online isn't aware of the situation we're in now, which is, for example, there are delays in postal carriers, especially USPS, and even domestically, that's becoming more of an issue. Another subject we probably shouldn't touch upon because it's political, but it is a reality. And so buyers are going to have that in their mind as well.
Another piece that's going to be new in the playbook and that I'm really excited about because I'm going to try it this year is that I'm going to put a little bit of how to leverage your social media to market your items to buyers and to actually get new buyers for yourself and for your listings. It's something that we've talked about a little bit in the past, but we really haven't put together a specific playbook, if you will, on just social media. So I'm interested in that. I'm kind of thinking about whether we're going to do a challenge with all of you to show us, you know, what's working or what's not working, to give us your tips, things like that.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, but it's to be determined, you know. But personally, there are things in here, and I will tell you, I'm going to be sharing tips that are not necessarily tried and true by me, but are by other sellers. And I'm pulling all that together, and I'm going to do a little section in the playbook this year on really, you know, how to market your business on social media platforms.
I should mention here, by the way, in case anyone's not aware of this, but you sell on eBay as well. You don't just work for eBay.
I do. Can you see some of the inventory behind me?
I wasn't going to bring it up, but yes, we can.
Yeah. I do sell, but this is a big household of sellers. Actually, some of us are way better than others, and me not being that person. But we haven't, this is my eBay studio. So we have, you know, a place where we take photos, a place where we store inventory. We have a shipping station. I have the same pains and irritations that our sellers do.
Yes. Is that a backdrop frame I see behind you?
Yeah. This is a photo backdrop frame. And okay, so here's the thing is, you should all know by now, you can actually use photo editing in your mobile phone to remove the backgrounds of your items. So if I took a picture of the mug, for example, behind this blue shirt, I can edit it in my phone and it'll automatically remove the background and give it a white backdrop. But this is actually where we hang the white backdrop if we want to take photos already on the white backdrop. And so it's the backdrop's not on it right now. We also have a photo box, and one of the sellers in this house prefers actually not to use a white backdrop, and it works for him because of what he sells. One thing I will say, and this applies to the playbook, is these are guidelines. These are best practices or practices we've seen working for many sellers, but it is not necessary. It's not a rule necessarily, unless we say it's a rule. And white backdrop falls under that. It's great in particular for items that are going to be in your inventory for a long time, not years, but longer
months.
Than a week.
Yeah.
Because it does a couple of things. You know, we invest in Google search terms. And we have tons of opportunity in those search terms for Google to pull items into their search, but they actually prefer to list items with a white backdrop.
Yeah.
It's just those little things. For my son that sells, he doesn't use the white backdrop because he posts on social and there's a particular look and feel he's going for.
Sure.
And he uses the same images on eBay, but his items don't sit very long. He doesn't have to think about Google as much.
It's a perfect example of, you know, whatever works for you, keep doing it. Even if it's not necessarily listed as the ideal best practice by anyone, including eBay, if it's working for you, that's what matters. Yes. Well, speaking about the playbook, where do we find it?
You can find it if you go to your browser and type in ebay.com/seasonalplaybook. And it's one word, seasonal playbook.
And we'll put that link in the transcript for the episode as we do for all links.
So please check it out. Like I said, we're going to have some new stuff in there. It's great. And Griff, you said something I also want to mention will be in this playbook, and that is, this is something we've had there for a while. I'm going to refresh it slightly, but we have the tips on the perfect listing.
Oh, yes.
That's still an important thing. It's still all about not just the title, but also item specific. And this is a trick that I have, not really a trick, but it's just a smart and efficient way to think about things, is item specifics, particularly when I can't put that name or brand or size or something. If I can't fit it into my title, I absolutely make sure it's in my item specifics. I get both hits on any way that a buyer is searching.
It's actually pretty important to have them in there if you can't fit in the titles. That's a great bit of advice.
Yeah. And also, you know, when your buyers are shopping, and in particular, if they're shopping on desktop or finishing their purchases and searching on desktop, that filtering that they do, well, I guess it's not just desktop, but the filtering that they do is pulling a lot from item specifics. So if you don't have those in your listings, you could potentially not be in those filters, because it's like deep diving into, I really want this specific size or model or color of X.
We're going to cover the perfect listing in a future episode during the month of September for the theme of holiday prep. And I'm hoping we can get Harry Temkin, our vice president of seller experience, to come on and talk about that particular aspect of getting ready. Because it's a perfect time, if you've got the time, to start getting your listings all nice and neat and clean. And that'll be part of the playbook as well. So this will be a repeat message.
But it's a good message.
It's a great message, yes. Well, Jen, I want to thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I haven't seen you face-to-face in so long. It seems like, I think it's been March since we've seen each other.
Yeah, a long time.
I went into the campus. It's all, everything's in order. It's empty, a little dusty, but it's all waiting for the time that we can all come back to campus and work face-to-face. Who knows? Maybe in 2021.
Maybe. But until then, I will be in my studio trying to list as much as possible.
And I'll be in my studio trying to run this podcast. So we and sell as well. So good luck with the rest of the holiday season. If we don't talk to you before the end of the year, I'm sure we probably will. And keep on listing. And thanks again for telling us about the holiday seasonal playbook for this year.
Thank you.
Jen Deal is the customer marketing strategist on eBay's go-to-marketing team. And we've been talking about the seasonal playbook. Again, as Jen said, you can find that at ebay.com/seasonalplaybook.
I'm Liz Austin, and I'm Senior Manager of Seller Marketing and Engagement at eBay. It's so nice to be back on the podcast. So it's holiday kickoff month here at eBay, where we're asking sellers to set their minds on the biggest retail moment coming up, holiday. Kind of feels way too early to start doing this, but the more prepared we are, the better we'll perform. So as we think about what to sell and the key moments of holiday when buyers will be searching and buying, we should think about how we might capture as much of this incremental shopping that happens every year. But marketing strategies are not just a one and done that we can quickly cover in one single podcast. So this is something that we will continue to cover throughout the holiday. But stay tuned to the podcast and we'll keep giving you more advice as we go along. But for today, we're going to lay down the foundations for our sellers to start thinking about ahead of holiday. And I've brought along my colleague, Sameep, who is running our eBay Partner Network program for sellers. Welcome, Sameep. How's the eBay Partner Network going?
The eBay Partner Network is our affiliate marketing program that allows almost anyone including sellers like yourself, to earn money for driving traffic to eBay. On June 15th, we introduced a pretty sweet incentive specifically for our seller community to encourage more sellers like yourself to take advantage of this program. If you're a seller and you are responsible for driving a potential customer back to your eBay store or item, and that person ends up buying from you, you'll effectively pay 0% final value fee on that transaction. We launched this about 2 months ago, and we've seen some really strong signup rates. So there's definitely been a lot of interest here from our seller community, and I'm excited to further talk about it today.
So there are so many different ways that sellers can market their eBay business to buyers. But what I want to clarify first for our sellers is that you have two choices when you sell on eBay. The first choice is really to rely on the 182 million buyers we have on the site, which is a huge amount of potential buyers for your listings. And number two, you can actively go and find more buyers who are searching, grow your brand off eBay, and then drive that traffic to your listings on eBay. Plus, if you connect with buyers off eBay by inspiring them to purchase your item, they're more likely to convert when they come to eBay because their purchase decision has already been made. They're coming to eBay to purchase directly from you. So you have two options: find your buyers on eBay, or find your buyers on eBay and find your buyers off eBay and bring them to your eBay listing to convert. What do you think, Sumit?
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Liz. I think developing a sound marketing strategy is a very critical first step that is often overlooked because executing successful marketing campaigns do take a lot of time and effort. So if you take a very focused, thoughtful approach, your likelihood of being successful definitely increases, especially when time is perhaps our most precious commodity.
With any good marketing strategy, you need to work out your four P's. Your product, that is what you're selling, your place, where you are selling, your price, and then how you're going to promote it. Presumably, you know where you're going to sell because you're an eBay seller. But do you truly? Are you selling what you've always sold because you know it well? When was the last time you tested selling something else? We had a category manager on the podcast a couple of weeks ago to talk about what we think will sell well over holiday. Go listen to the podcast and maybe try selling something else. So test some new products out and see if they sell. Price. We've got Terapeak to use to work out the best price. Also check what has sold well by checking sold items on eBay. Note what price your competitors are selling it at and either go cheaper or offer more value through free shipping or multi-packs. Now, we need to talk about promotions. The way that you can promote yourself has evolved so incredibly over the past few years. But before we go into promotions, I really want us to talk about building your brand. So, Sumit, when we're talking about building a brand on eBay, what's your advice as it relates to sellers? Why should sellers care about brand?
I think it's definitely important. And even on a large marketplace like eBay, building a brand is just as important for all of our sellers. First of all, it can help serve as a point of differentiation. In some cases, what you may be selling is truly unique, in which case you're very fortunate. But in many cases, you are competing against other sellers that have similar items. So having that brand connection can really be a differentiating factor that delivers you the sale. Having a professional brand presence on eBay does serve as a quality signal, and it is something buyers do take into consideration when choosing what to ultimately buy. The second big reason brand is important is to drive buyer loyalty. Acquiring a customer is perhaps the hardest thing to do in business. You want to be able to maximize the value of that customer relationship by driving repeat purchases from you. And the underlying driver of that is your brand. So having a very strong brand is important in this regard.
What are some brand touch points sellers have access to on eBay?
You know, oftentimes when we think of a brand, we think of very tangible touch points like a name or a logo. And these are all very important because this is what a customer sees and remembers. In the more traditional eBay world, that means having a unique and easy to remember, and dare I say, easy to spell username. It means creating nice, clean, professional looking storefronts, potentially designing a logo, having clean descriptions, all of the best practices that we often talk about. But a brand goes way beyond the tangibles, right? How a buyer feels about you is also a critical part of your brand. So providing an exceptional end-to-end customer service, both pre-purchase, like answering questions promptly and in a friendly manner, and post-purchase are things I wouldn't discount as well. eBay is a very human-centric marketplace, so I wouldn't discount the value of adding that human element wherever possible. Even small things like a personalized thank you note can go a strong way in developing that emotional connection that buyers may have with your brand.
And then this very same brand can extend off eBay onto your social media channels and other marketing channels that you might choose to use. How you show up on eBay should also be how you show up off eBay. So the next step for sellers to think about for their marketing strategy is, who is their customer? For those sellers who sell sneakers, for example, who are sneaker buyers? What do they care about? How can you establish a rapport with them? Well, we can easily deduct that they care about quality fashion. They're inspired by the latest sneaker trends. They follow influencers to get these insights. Where would it make sense to find these types of buyers to meet and have a conversation with them?
eBay buyers are digital consumers. They are looking online for inspiration. They're looking at social media. Definitely makes sense to have that as one of the leading aspects of your off eBay marketing strategy. Think about this in the context of the buyer journey. The buyer's journey starts with a need, or in many cases, inspiration, a spark that makes them want something that they may not have been thinking about earlier. And social media is one of the main places consumers go for inspiration, but definitely encourage thinking about how you can create content or postings that create that spark and inspire buyers to want to come to your store and purchase from you.
I've also been seeing sellers lately use social media marketing to take potential buyers to something of value, like advice. For example, if you're selling makeup, you could write a blog on how best to do your makeup for Zoom Giving, assuming we're all celebrating Thanksgiving on Zoom this year. Then the makeup you'd recommend on your blog is then hyperlinked directly to your eBay listings. That piece of value is what you promote or you pay for in your social media marketing. And then your actual eBay listings is contained within that value piece of content or that blog that you've created. So instead of using social media marketing to take buyers directly to your eBay listing, it takes them to a place where they learn something or are inspired by you and are more likely to want to transact. Anyway, Sumit, if sellers are thinking about using social media marketing to drive buyers to their listings, how can they create an EPN or an eBay partner network link at the same time and pay no final value fees?
First, you need to sign up for the eBay Partner Network. It's free. It's tied to your eBay account, and it only takes a few minutes to apply. You can do this at partnernetwork.ebay.com. Once you're approved, you want to use the EPN tools that are available in the dashboard to create what we call affiliate links for the listings or for your store that you want to promote, whether it's on your blog or social media or whatever channels you choose to use. And this is important because this is how we can track everything. This is how we can give you credit for bringing in the sale. There are a few and easy to use tools that you can find once you log in to the eBay Partner Network dashboard. There's even some that will allow you to directly integrate your Facebook account and post to Facebook and Pinterest. So definitely check them out. And they're really not too cumbersome by any means. Very easy, very intuitive to use. Pretty much as easy as copying the link to your item or store, pasting it into the tool, and clicking create link, and it'll pop out your trackable link, and then you just use that wherever you're creating or posting your content. And one of the things that is definitely important to know is that you, as a seller, you can choose to promote individual listings. You can choose to promote your store. It could be category pages within your store. So there's a lot of flexibility in what you can promote and what you can ultimately use to generate traffic and earnings. But I will be remiss if I don't mention that whenever you do engage in social media marketing, you do want to make sure that you adhere to the specific platform's affiliate marketing policies, as well as FTC disclosure requirements. But we obviously want you to promote your store outside of eBay, but we want you to do it in the right way so that you don't get unknowingly in trouble.
Well, that sounds a bit serious. Does that mean adding hashtag advertisement to your posts or something like that so followers know you're getting paid for the piece of content?
Each platform, from time to time, you know, what they allow or what they recommend can change. So I don't want to get too prescriptive, but generally speaking, putting a hashtag ad or hashtag affiliate, hashtag paid content, something like that, generally gets the requirement.
Another great, super exciting channel for sellers to reach buyers is on YouTube. More and more people are searching YouTube for inspiration. YouTube actually allows wonderful instructional or edutainment content for sellers to show off their expertise. Take, for example, sellers who sell decor, and we've got Halloween coming up. So maybe a great piece of content that a seller who sells decor could create for YouTube is a video about dressing your house up for Halloween on a budget. And then the buyer or viewer can find all the items that you show in your video in your eBay store. So, Sumit, presumably you just use the same EPN links for your YouTube videos to get your free final value fee if your items sell as well?
That's absolutely right. The mechanics would be the same that I spoke about a few minutes ago. You know, you just want to make sure that you're using the affiliate links you've created through the eBay Partner Network tools so that we can track you and pay you out for your efforts.
Great. And you can totally do that same type of how-to video on social media as well, so on Instagram stories. But really, the biggest tip is to give your customers something of value. Blogs, webinars, special events are all examples of other value that you can offer to buyers. To walk them through what you have on offer, show off your expertise, and then once you've convinced them to purchase, take them straight to your eBay listing to purchase securely. And then the final thing I want us to talk about today is relationship building, or other words, loyalty. Sumit, why do you think creating loyal customers is super critical for our sellers and a really strong marketing tactic if you're thinking about a marketing strategy for holiday?
Once you've gotten someone to buy something from you, you've already done the heavy lifting, so to speak. A stranger has decided to give you their hard-earned money. And if you follow through with the greater customer experience, that will start to build trust with that buyer. To convert that trust into loyalty and hence repeat purchases, you might need to give them a little bit of a nudge, a little bit of a reminder. And this is where our discussion around marketing strategies really fit in. Not to get too technical, but one last lesson from Marketing 101. And that's the notion of CLV, customer lifetime value, the lifetime value a customer brings to your business. Loyalty is a key driver of customer lifetime value because the cost of driving a repeat purchase is usually less than the cost of acquiring a customer. So loyalty is definitely an important aspect of driving a very healthy and hopefully very profitable business.
What are then the ways sellers can drive loyalty or repeat purchase with their buyers on eBay?
You know, I wouldn't discount the importance of delivering a great end-to-end customer experience, which starts even before the time of purchase. Post-purchase, obviously, delivering what the buyer wants and in the time frame that they're expecting it is obviously important. But I would also think about the small things you can do to delight your buyers. These are little aha types of things that may not seem like a big deal, but could really build that personal emotional connection with your buyers. We're talking about holidays here. And while holidays have become very commercialized with all the Black Friday frenzies and all the craziness, I would still argue that holidays are still about family. It's still all about connections. So this is definitely a good time to take advantage of that opportunity and something small like adding a thank you note with your signature and eBay store name. Very old school sounding concept, but even to this day, time and time again, we hear stories about how meaningful those are. Some other holiday centric type of ideas, maybe throwing in an unexpected gift with purchase or a free sample with a makeup purchase as an example. It's something your buyer is not expecting, but if you do it in a way that is pleasantly surprising to them, it can definitely go a long way in driving that loyalty that we've talked about. A few different things to think about. Email marketing, of course, is an obvious one. Through social, you can also give them inside scoops, as an example, letting them know that you have a new item of interest that might be coming and getting them excited so they can kind of get to the front of the proverbial e-commerce line, inserting QR codes or other type of promotional material in your packaging to get them to come back to your eBay store and make purchases is something to think about. I think there's some creative ways here to leverage the eBay Partner Network and some of our promotions manager capabilities in a way that could deliver a compelling discount to your buyer while at the same time lowering final value fees for yourself. So a lot of ideas I've thrown out, thinking creatively about how you can build that connection with your buyer.
Today, we've talked at a very high level about what sellers can think about as it relates to marketing strategies for holidays to get buyers onto eBay. So just to recap, it's the four Ps: product, price, place, and promotion, brand building, who is your customer, loyalty, which is obviously super critical to push through repeat purchase. And then when sellers start executing on all of these strategies, where does EPN fit in? So make one last little blurb there.
Make sure that you create the links while you're already doing it through EPN. Post them, and if the sale converts, you will pay no final value fee on those transactions.
Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Liz Austin, and thanks for joining us on the eBay for Business podcast.
Continuing with our 25 Seller Stories for 25 Years of eBay miniseries, today I have the pleasure of conversing with eBay seller Tara Sentenkaya, who sells on eBay under the user ID MyModefa, and that is spelled MyModefa. Welcome to the miniseries, Tara.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We've got so much to talk about, but first I'd like to find out how long you've been an eBay seller.
We have been on eBay since early 2013, so it's almost 8 years.
Was your eBay selling your first venture into entrepreneurship, or did you have a business before that?
We had a business before then. We had founded our company the end of 2011 and actually got things going really in 2012. And so, you know, it was probably like 6 months or so after that that we got in on eBay.
What led you to eBay, by the way?
There was a lot of different things. I think, you know, eBay is one of the biggest sales channels around, and it's also really easy to get set up on. I think that was it. We just wanted to be able to reach as many different customers as we could, and eBay was a great option.
What category do you primarily sell in on eBay?
We sell in fashion, scarves, and home decor. And then the other big one is our prayer rugs, which actually eBay actually has a category for Islamic prayer rugs. Yeah, under that category.
You said fashion. Can you tell us what your big sellers are?
We have hijabs, and that's one of our biggest things that we're selling, especially on eBay. Turkish hijabs, silk hijabs, different kinds, squares, shawls, things like that.
And there's a big market for hijabs.
Yes, there's a lot of Muslim women in the United States who are wearing hijab, and so they're looking for different styles. So we try to offer a lot of different kinds.
I think a lot of Americans, when they think of Islamic dress, or specifically the hijab, they think of a very dark colored fabric, really not making a statement beyond just being a hijab. That's changing over the last few years. Can you tell us a little bit about that change in the style of Islamic dress for women?
Yeah, I think a lot of the change has to do with the fact that many people have often associated Saudis as, you know, the representatives of Islam, kind of. And so that you see, you know, whenever you see pictures of Saudi women, they're wearing black hijabs or black clothing. And so I think a lot of people get that picture in their mind. But as people come to get to know Muslims better, and especially Muslims in America, you're realizing that there's a vast variety of different kinds of Muslims and Muslim women and what they wear, what they prefer to wear. I know, for example, like all of our stuff is from Turkey. And if you look at Turkish Muslim women, their hijabs are very colorful. It's really typical to find very beautifully printed floral or abstract pattern hijabs there.
I've noticed in the past several years that hijabs being one, but the whole idea of Islamic dress for women becoming very fashion conscious. And you see it in the pages of Vogue. You're seeing it on runways. You find it now in a lot of major designers or stores. I assume this has had a good impact on your business.
Yes, it is. And it's interesting because, like, when we first started our business, one of the reasons we started was because you couldn't really find that stuff here. It was really hard to find modest clothing that suited Muslim women's needs. If you could find something, it would be, there was always something wrong. Like if you went to, you know, the regular secular stores, you would find maybe the sleeves are long, but the neck is low cut, or it's too short. It doesn't, you know, go as long as you want, or the fabric is too heavy for the summertime. Since we started our business, there's been a lot of different, especially Muslim women, entrepreneurs stepping up and doing a lot of amazing things, having their own clothing lines, designing clothes for Muslim women by Muslim women. And lots of different hijab companies as well that have come up, you know, within the United States.
That's been good for your business, but it's also led to some competition, I assume, that wasn't
at the beginning. Yeah, there is a lot more. I mean, there's a lot more awareness and people knowing that there's a lot of options out there to buy. But yeah, it does mean more competition for us.
So that's in the fashion end. And we may return to that in our conversation. But you also mentioned housewares. What kind of housewares do you sell? And how does that set you apart from other sellers in this very competitive category?
House decor we sell is, you know, specifically for Muslims. They are things that are representing Islamic motifs, things that will say the names of Allah or different paintings. A lot of stuff that we have right now are table decor pieces. So things that you might put on your bookshelf or your mantel place. Things like that. We have a lot of pieces that are really popular like that right now.
I don't want you to give away your sources, but can you tell us, are most of those also sourced from, you said Turkey for the hijabs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of our products, almost like 99% of the products we sell are all coming from Turkey. So, and we're importing all those products ourselves too.
Now, has the pandemic had an impact on your sourcing and selling abilities?
It has actually. And I think when this all first started, we didn't really realize how it was going to affect us. And as things kept progressing, we realized more and more how it was. The main thing is that in Turkey, things shut down for several months because of the pandemic. So I know the United States didn't come to a complete halt, but in Turkey, like they pretty much did, and they shut down the factories. We weren't able to get restocks of a lot of our products because all of the big factories were closed. Any of the bigger factories we work with, which is, for example, mostly our prayer rugs and a lot of the home decor as well, we couldn't get that stuff and we couldn't get restocks. There were some items we were able to order and get from smaller sellers who were still working, but we couldn't ship it here because the air cargo rates skyrocketed. So air cargo wasn't an option. We normally do sea freight, but it takes time. But even that, there were challenges to that and raised costs, and it was just going to be too difficult. So we didn't actually get to be able to start importing again or get our container out of Turkey again until the end of June. And actually, it just arrived today. Just coincidentally, they just were unloading it this morning. Oh, so people have been asking because we've sold out of a lot of stuff and a lot of our best sellers. And people keep asking, what's going on? Why don't you have this stuff? And I think a lot of consumers don't realize either the effect that it can have on the market.
What did you do to keep above water during those few months when you had no sourcing, no incoming supply, and you were running out of listings to put up on eBay?
We got a little bit lucky in the fact that we received a container at the start of the pandemic, pretty much. So like, I think it was the first week of April. So we had gotten it out before things started going downhill, and we received it at the beginning of our busy season, which is Ramadan. So pretty much end of April through all of May was our busy season. So we were also selling at higher levels, but we had received a huge shipment the first week of April that was able to get us through most of May. And then we started towards the end of May running out of stuff. But in some ways it was good because we looked at our warehouse and saw what are some items that we don't have online right now. What can we get online? Typically, we wouldn't try to waste our time getting stuff online that we didn't have a whole lot of, just because it's so time consuming to take photos and to get the listings up. But we went into our warehouse and just went in every corner and tried to find, is there something, you know, we don't have, even if we just have a few of them that we can get online and try to get rid of some of this older inventory. That helped us.
That helped as well. How big is your operations? How many employees do you have?
We have 3 employees right now, and our building is almost 7,000 square feet. And part of that is a showroom, but I think the warehouse is about at least half of that space.
Now, is the showroom open to the public? People can come in?
Yes, it is. It's pretty much like a store, you know, like a retail store. So it's open to the public for people in Dallas. That was shut down too for a couple months, you know, here in Texas. We're in Texas, and they had ordered businesses to close for a couple months. So, but we opened back up at the end of May.
This whole pandemic has introduced an enormous amount of uncertainty for everyone, not just on a personal level, of course, but also when it comes to things like running a business.
Yeah.
Now, you had your supply chain interrupted once. Are there contingencies or plans you're making in case that happens again? Because it doesn't look like this is just going to simply go away, for example, for the pandemic. What sort of plans, if any, have you made for the rest of the year and in 2021?
We are really nervous because we have no idea what to expect here. And even not just like this from the supply chain vantage point, but our sales dropped a lot in March and early April. And that was very scary, especially because our business has never experienced something like that. We're always been growing and increasing our sales and stuff. And to see that things kind of crash in March, like when the stock market crashed, it was really scary for us. After seeing that, I think the whole rest of the time we've been proceeding with caution and knowing that at any time the bottom could drop out, you know, and our sales could drop again. We're worried again right now because we just had the second Eid, which is the Muslim holiday, just this past weekend. And, you know, our sales kind of stayed good through the summer. So now that Eid is over, we're worried that things could start to drop off again. So we've been really cautious about making sure we're not trying to overspending or investing too much in one way or the other staffing wise. In some ways, we feel like we need to hire a lot more staff, but then we're very cautious. Like we don't want to hire people and then like not have work for them if things start to drop off. So just going slowly with that. As far as our supply, we're still, you know, at the point of trying to catch up. It's really hard, but right now we're in a constant state of making orders with our vendors so that we can get stock in. And I think the plan is just to try to keep a continual flow of inventory coming in so that we always have something or at least we can something to get us through.
Yeah. Tara, have you considered for your business actually branching out into more diverse product lines in order to keep that interest? Because I know that for a lot of sellers in March, especially, they saw their businesses drop. There were some sellers who saw a quick return based on what they were selling, things that were focused in on having to stay at home. Maybe stuff that you have to use for helping kids online for learning because they're not going into the classroom. Have you considered that?
Not too much, because I think we do have some products that people were very interested in as well during this pandemic. We saw a big increase in sales of prayer rugs because the mosques were closed and where people had to, you know, pray at home. And also because it was Ramadan, people were buying a lot of gifts and things, but prayer rug sales were huge in April and May. I know we have considered or talked about possibly branching out into different countries. So, you know, if Turkey has to shut down again, we might have to look at sourcing products from another country. We wouldn't want to do that because that's part of our business. People associate us as having Turkish products, but you got to do what you got to do. And so if it comes to that, we would definitely have to look at different countries that have the products that we need.
One of the big sellers, obviously, in the last few months has been masks. Is there a play there?
It's funny. We actually looked into masks in the beginning because we saw that there was a big shortage and Turkey is really big into textiles and things. And so we thought, you know, surely somebody's making masks. And we had actually one of our vendors, they had them, they were making them, but Turkey wasn't allowing exports of masks. We had wanted to, and we couldn't because they were banned. And a lot of countries actually had done that, you know, earlier on in March and April, they weren't letting anybody export because everybody was having the same issue.
Oh, scarcity.
Scarcity. Since then, it's come across, do we want to do that again? But now, you know, everybody has masks now. But if it came to it again, we would look at, you know, if there was another problem, we definitely would be able to get some from Turkey, I think.
Would it not be considered the proper use of a hijab to actually adapt it so that it could cover the lower part of the face as well?
Actually, there's been a lot of Muslim women who use their hijab as a face covering. They just tie it in a different way. So it's covering their nose and mouth instead of just coming under the chin. Yeah. So we've seen a lot of that. At one point, we did look into our stock and see, do we have any hijabs that we could try to sell as masks? Because I know people were selling like bandanas and things. But I think the only things we had were a little bit too thick, a thicker cotton that wouldn't be that well suited.
Have you ever considered for your business the prospect of manufacturing your own fashion to sell here?
It's something we've considered, but not in terms of making it here in the USA, just because the cost and time and effort would be a lot.
Yeah.
There's so many different aspects of our business right now and so many different things we could focus on. I think that would be a little too much. But we have considered doing our own clothing line, partnering with a factory in Turkey that will make it for us. Yeah,
that'd be great. You could actually brand it then. It could be Modefa Passions.
We do have other things. Like we have our prayer rugs that are branded. They're our own brand. We do have a couple hijabs that are our own brand. We have some jersey hijabs that we came out last fall that have our own brand. And some instant hijabs as well. Those have become quite popular.
What's an instant hijab?
Instead of having to, you know, spend a lot of time with tying the hijab and making it a certain way to make it look nice, it comes pre-sewn. So you don't really have to do much. There's different levels. There's some that are so simple, it takes 5 seconds to put on. You just slip on and everything is where it should be. And there's others that, you know, you tie back and then you just throw it around the top. But yeah, we have a lot of different options like that. And turbans as well.
Well, that was just going to say, because we've been talking primarily about women's fashion. There are many men in the Muslim community. Do you offer products for them in your eBay store?
We do. We have men's hats. So they're called kufis or takes, they call them, like the skull caps, basically. So we have a variety of those. Also in the fall, we came out with a men's thobe line. They're called thobes. They're basically like a dress for men. So they're a long sleeve, floor length outfit that men tend to wear on special occasions or for prayers or for holidays and things like that.
Over the years, and I remember this was probably more popular back when I was young during the 60s, and the phrase cultural appropriation had not been really invented yet. But lots of folks would adapt or adopt different features from various cultures for clothing. For example, I remember very popular at the time were the djellabas that come from Morocco. Men would wear them. In fact, I know friends of mine who still wear them. Is that something that's a consideration in your business? the items that you're offering may not necessarily be going directly to someone who is a Muslim.
Yes. And actually, I mean, we have seen that before. It's not always apparent online because sometimes you can't tell by people's names. You know, they could be a convert or something. But we've definitely seen that locally with the customers that we are able to meet, that sometimes they aren't Muslims. I know, for example, we have a lady that comes in often who's, I believe she's pagan, I think, but she likes to cover her hair, part of her practices. And so she gets our hijabs, and she also likes to dress modestly as well. There's a couple different products that are popular for different people. So that's one. Jews also like to use the headscarves, especially the silk scarves are really popular because there are some, especially Orthodox Jews, that like to cover their hair as well. The skull caps go across some different religions and different ethnicities and things too. The prayer rugs, actually, we've had people using them for different things, like for yoga, or Christians using them to create their own prayer space at home, as well as Jews using them as well.
That's fantastic, isn't it? The idea that it's a really interesting topic. People from different persuasions or different religious backgrounds, all kind of sharing the same sort of items.
Yep. We see the same thing, too, with the prayer beads. So in Islam, they call them a tesbih. But in, you know, Catholics use the same kind of thing as a rosary. They will get those as well.
Are your prayer rugs hand woven?
They are not. Hand woven rugs were very expensive.
Yes, I know.
And so, we don't sell those because it wouldn't be cost effective or they wouldn't sell very well, I think, for everyday use for our customers. But we do have some different kinds of, a couple different types of wall tapestries, but they're mostly still Islamic focused. And we do have some rugs that kind of resemble more like an area rug kind of thing. But for the most part, that's kind of a separate category that we don't get into very much.
We always ask this of any one of our sellers from the 25 Seller Story mini series. If you had to give a piece of advice to a seller who came up to you and said, "Hey, I see you're doing pretty well on eBay," what would be your advice to me in order for me to be more successful at selling based on your own experience over the last nearly 10 years of selling on eBay?
I think there's probably two main things I can think of. The first one is making sure that you have really great photos of your products that will stand out so that when people are scrolling through, they can see this really awesome photo that just pops out to them. And the other thing is to list as much as you can, like whatever you can, as much as you can. What we've noticed is that on eBay, you tend to get rewarded in the algorithms for selling more. So when you sell more of one item, you tend to sell more of another item. In the beginning, we actually, in order to try to boost our sales of other inventory, we were selling Vera Bradley bags, which is, you know, so odd and different, but I really like Vera Bradley. And I had somehow come across a way that I was buying them cheap and then I was reselling them and those were selling good. And we noticed whenever those sold good, our other products, our Islamic products were selling good as well. It was like our whole account kind of got this boost from the traffic, even though there was completely separate categories. We don't do that anymore. I think we have enough different kinds of products now, but it's interesting because it's almost like a snowball effect that we had one day a couple months ago that was crazy, or not even a couple months ago. It was like a month ago. Our sales were through the roof in one day. Certain things started selling really good and everything else started selling good. And it's really interesting how that works.
Did you have any theory as to why that was happening on that one day?
I don't know. And I don't know that I've gone back and looked at it close enough. I know certain days that we've done really well, I've realized it had to do with me taking advantage of a new thing that eBay has. And I don't remember if this happened on that day, but what I'm talking about is the ability to send offers to people who are watching your listing.
Yeah.
I suddenly realized, I think it was probably in like March or February, that we had this new tool out of the middle of the nowhere. I'm looking at my homepage and I said, "What is this?" You know, like you can send offers to, it was like 300 different listings that we had watchers on that we could send offers to. And I was like, "This is crazy. What is this?" And I went through and I used it to, and I've been using it to try to get rid of some of our older inventory or things that we have a lot of or overstocked, especially on days I see that our sales are down. If I'm looking in the morning or something or afternoon and it looks our sales are down that day, I'll go through and start sending offers out to people. And it's usually a pretty immediate reaction. Like I've had people within 5 minutes of me sending an offer, they're accepting and paying for it. It's a really nice tool that they've launched to let us be able to do that.
Yeah, those were sales you probably wouldn't have made otherwise.
Yeah.
And a sale is a sale.
Yep, exactly. And there's some things that we know we have some room that I can do even at 10% or 15% on.
Sure.
If it's something that's really overstocked, I might do more. But usually I'm just offering people 10 to 15% off of something that I know we can do that on. And it's been really effective.
I know as a buyer, it's had a big impact on me that I spend more. So thanks, eBay. Thanks for dragging more money out of my wallet. I always appreciate that. And as sellers, that's the word that we have heard from so many sellers that can make a big difference in the volume of sales. So thanks for bringing that one up. I had almost forgotten about it.
One other feature of eBay that I really like, which is the global selling program. And that's had a really positive effect on us too. You know, when we started our business, we didn't think about how many other people in other countries might be interested in our stuff. We were focused on American consumers, but eBay makes it really easy to not only get your products in front of people in other countries on eBay, but also making the whole process of getting the products to them really simple. They're handling pretty much everything on the export side of it. For those who don't know, you're sending the product to the eBay facility. And then eBay is shipping that out internationally for you. The customer is paying us for the product and they're paying eBay for the shipping and customs fees. And it's a really nice streamlined process that makes it pretty simple for everybody involved. And
off the top of your head, what would you say the percentage of your sales overall go through the global shipping program at eBay?
I haven't looked at it recently, but I'd probably guess it's like maybe 10 to 15%.
Oh, that's substantial. That's a big part of your business.
I think so.
I know it's hard to tell sometimes because you ship everything to Kentucky when it's global shipping program.
Yeah.
But do you have any idea of how far flung some of your items may have traveled?
I'm not sure. I know that I've seen that they've gone to Europe and to Canada.
Yeah.
And I think I saw before Australia as well. But besides that, I'm not really sure. I know there's a way that you can look at it and see where the buyer is from. But I don't usually take the time to go and dig into that.
Yeah, you have to actually look for it in the order details. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much, Tara. This has been a great conversation and I've learned a little something. I hope our sellers have too. And I want to congratulate you again on being selected as one of the 25 sellers out of literally thousands that applied. Mm. So thank you for doing that. I know that the team will have more things for you to do in the way of interviews and other content, but I'm glad you took the time to talk to us here on the podcast today.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's been a really great experience.
Tara Sentenkaya sells on eBay under the user ID MyModefa. That's MyModefa. You have excellent photos, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm glad I was able to say that. You've got questions, we've got answers.
And what's the question this week, Griff?
Well, this week's question number one comes from Justin from Logan, Utah. And it's a question and a request for a feature. Would you like to do the honors?
Sure. Justin writes, "Hello, and thank you so much for your weekly podcast. I certainly enjoy listening to it and always learn something that I didn't know. Justin, we're glad that you listen, so thanks." All right, Justin continues, "I do have a question, however. We use Best Offer, and we see a lot of sales conversion from this. My question is there any method for eBay to let us know and identify returning customers? This would be an excellent feature to see within eBay, especially within offers. To help you identify returning customers, that will certainly help us help the seller make a better decision." Mm. "Thank you so much, Justin from Logan, Utah."
It's a great suggestion and one that I've heard many times before. So it was a good reminder. Thanks, Justin.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to be able to identify returning customers and start building a relationship with them.
Yeah, right now it's really difficult. You can do it, but it's a lot of work. You can always keep a list of past customers and then quickly go through it. For example, if somebody is sending an offer to determine whether they've bought from you in the past. And I think the reason being, and I can see this, if you're a seller, you may want to give a better offer to a returning customer than you might to a customer who's new, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll certainly pass this suggestion along because it's a great one.
Yeah, there's nothing right now, Justin, but as Rebecca said, we'll copy this and forward it to the team responsible. In fact, I think I'll send this right to Harry.
That's a good idea, Griff.
Let's go right to the top.
Absolutely. We also had a message left on our podcast voice line. Let's listen in.
Hello, this is Heart's Desire Fiber, and I have a comment. It's wonderful that eBay has the option of the local pickup, but I'm questioning if mine is the same result that most people are having. I have people just see it's free shipping and they click and they're usually in Florida, California. I'm in New York. It's a real hassle getting this resolved with the buyer, and they're usually upset. And it's a tenuous thing to work with, trying to get them not to be upset and make them happy. But is there a way for everyone that you could somehow build into the platform that if you're not in the local area, that's not an option that shows up? Or at least a note during checkout stating, you've chosen this item for a local pickup, and you must understand that this will not be to your location. You know, just even just something like that right next to the payment thing. So they can't say, they're going to ship it anyway. Thanks for considering this as a change in the platform. You guys are really doing a great job. And I'm on managed payments now, and I love it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heart's Desire.
Yeah, thanks for that. And another great suggestion, Griff, although I'm not sure I totally understand, because isn't local pickup a fairly new feature that we have? Walk me through this.
It's not fairly new, but I think a lot of sellers possibly don't use it correctly. So the local pickup option was presented as an option for shipping for eBay sellers when they have items that may be just too unwieldy for them to pack and ship, like a large appliance or a piece of furniture or industrial equipment. A lot of sellers will include it as an option, even with shipping options for smaller items, because they don't mind having people come to their place of business. So, for example, if you have a brick and mortar store, for those who are local to your area, you might offer this as a local pickup. You can come in and pick it up at the store or at my home. I took a look at her listing. She sells nothing heavy. It's all mostly wool for weaving or for knitting. And so I asked her some questions to get an answer back, because I had to email her. And I said, is there a reason why you're using local pickup? And she said, well, just in case someone is in my neighborhood and I don't have to ship it. And I asked her if, you know, you get a lot of these, and she said no. I said, I actually think you should take it off. That would prevent the problem. Quite frankly, I've not heard of this happening. I have never really had a seller complain that they were offering local pickup for an option, and then buyers were selecting it because it looked like a free option, as opposed to if they're charging for shipping, which the seller does.
So what you're saying really is that the power really lies in the seller's own hands to be able to manage what kind of shipping options they offer.
Yeah. What she was suggesting was building something into the platform that says, if you're not in the local area, then they don't see the option. But how do you determine what's the local area? And there's some sellers who wouldn't want that to happen, who legitimately use local pickup for some reason. So the best way is to, for small items, to consider not using it. But so many people do business out of their home, and perhaps you don't want strangers coming to your house, especially during this time in our with the pandemic and all. So,
yeah, I definitely agree. We certainly encourage sellers to be thoughtful about the choices that they make, including using local pickup. But for, as you say, for the big and heavy items, or if you have a place of business, it sounds like it's a really great option.
Rebecca, that's all the questions for this week. It's been a kind of a long show, so I didn't want to pack them in, but we'll have more questions for the weeks ahead.
And speaking of which, if you have a question or a comment for the podcast, call us at 888-723-4630.
888-723-4630, and you can call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week. You can leave a question or comment on the voice message machine, and we'll listen to it, I guarantee. And if it's appropriate, we just might put it on the air.
If you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Someone asked me, what do you mean when you say if it's appropriate? What I mean is there are some questions that we cannot answer, and those are questions that have to do with specific account detail issues, like my listings were ended, or my account was suspended, or anything that we'd have to use and identify your account on the air. We can't do that for privacy concerns, so we don't air those kinds of questions, but we do direct you to customer support who can help you with those. Don't forget your daily podcast to-do list.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Visit the seasonal playbook that Jen Deal talked about. You can find it at ebay.com/seasonal playbook.
And check out the transcript for this and all episodes to follow up on what you've heard and to see the links we've referenced during this episode.
On our next episode, eBay Vice President of Seller Experience Harry Temkin helps us freshen up our stale listings to get them ready for holiday buyers, and we'll meet our new seller whose story was one of the 25 selected for the 25 Story Series.
Griff, we'd like to again thank our guests for this week, Liz Austin and Sumit Patel, Jen Deal, and eBay seller Tara Setinkaya.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.